Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Thursday, May 21st, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton, in for Shona Osterhout. On today's show, we'll catch up with KTOO Arts, Culture, and Music producer Annie Bartholomew. And we'll talk with Sharon Lowe about the Summer Food Service Program. Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up, and Paul Magid from the new Old Time Chautauqua will be here to talk about their activities next month. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon, currently 68 degrees at the Juno Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Indigenous game designers, coders, and artists are gathering in Santa Clara, California Friday to talk about the future of the native game industry. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver has more.
Self-determination is the notion behind the Natives in Game Dev Gathering. Elizabeth LaPonce is an Anishinaabe, Métis, and Irish game designer. She says this is the first event of its kind, and she's excited about it.
To have a number of Native people come together and give talks from game industry. This has never happened before.
Presentations range from incorporating Native hip-hop into games to using Indigenous science teachings in game mechanics.
So we get to have these really robust, really exciting topics because we don't have to just be talking about what's out there already in commercial game industry.
Alaska will be represented by Ishmael Hope, one of the lead writers for the groundbreaking 2014 game Never Alone, Kisima Ingichuna. He says he hopes to open up honest conversations about where Native game developers can go from this point on.
A chance to kind of take that next step forward versus always trying to sort of work through, you know, centuries-old divides and barriers.
The goal, says LaPonce, is for Indigenous gamers, developers, and designers to recognize their own independent potential.
I hope that future generations will look back at this moment and see this work and will, you know, still carry on the ways in a way that they, you know, can respect the position we're in now and where they're going to be then will be much more vast, is my hope.
In Homer, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
The National Park Service is asking people to participate in a nationwide educational program called Find Your Park. As Jim Kent reports, the goal is for visitors to find their favorite park and share stories online at findyourpark.com.
The Find Your Park program is a precursor to the 2016 centennial anniversary of the National Park Service. The federal agency has invited the public to recognize that a national park can be more than a place. It can be a feeling, a state of mind, or even a source of American pride. Although the campaign does celebrate vast landscapes, it also highlights historical, urban, and cultural locations and related National Park Service programs nationwide. Badlands National Park Education Specialist Julie Jondrew says Find Your Park is all about connecting the American people to their national parks. Jondrew notes that's especially important for Native Americans.
Our national parks in South Dakota, of course, are very special to the Lakota and the Native American people who live here. Here at the Badlands, we have a youth internship program which involves a lot of Native American youth. And they work in the park and are finding their park that way and bringing that renewed connection back to their communities.
Special events centered around the Find Your Park theme are taking place at Badlands National Park, as well as the more than 400 other National Park Service locations across the country. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
The Saginaw Chippewa Tribe is hosting the Anishinaabe Ancestral Repatriation Observance Friday. The Michigan Tribe is repatriating the remains of 41 Native Americans. Most of the remains are from the American Museum of Natural History in New York. One remain is from a group in Ohio and another one from a museum in Michigan. 10 federally recognized tribes and 2 state historic tribes are expected to take part in the repatriation and reburial ceremony. The event is set to take place on the tribe's reservation in Mount Pleasant. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, May 21st, 2015. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. I'm your host today, Scott Burton, in for Shona. My first guest on the show today, she is the new KTOO-KXLL-KRNN 360 North Arts, Culture, and Music producer, Annie Bartholomew. Welcome, Annie.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me.
That's quite a title you have there.
It's pretty long. People ask me what I do, and I'm like, well, I do a lot of things at KTOO, but it's kind of hard to explain all the cool things we got going in this building.
Absolutely.
So that
new
takes another
media,
minute.
Yeah.
Right?
All new media. A lot of what you're doing, though, is going to be focused on KXLL.
You betcha.
And I want to talk about that in a minute. But first, you have an interesting history with K2, with this building. Take us all the way back to the beginning and how you met K2.
How I met K2? Well, my mom used to listen to KTOO every single morning when she'd get ready in the morning. And so I kind of grew up on Morning Edition, you know, on our, like, carpool home. We'd always hear All Things Considered in somebody's dad's truck. And I don't know, typical Southeast Alaska experience.
You're a product of public radio in
Juneau. I am. It's pretty awesome. A lot of people don't get that experience. I just interned at NPR Music, and some of the kids in there had never heard NPR before because they were, like, visual people, and they had an expertise in photography. But we're just, like, coming into it, so that was different.
But for you, it was like going to the mothership.
Oh, my God, I was freaking out. It was so, oh, my God, I was having a panic attack just around every corner. They did this question and answer session at the beginning, and they had a contest to see if you could guess these, like, throwback pictures of all the different hosts, and I kept getting them all, and I had to just be quiet. It's like, that's Ira Flatow. That's Peter Sagal.
So that's a big deal, that internship that you got at NPR. It was with All Songs Considered, right?
Yeah.
And how did you get that?
Oh, well, I wouldn't have got it if I hadn't started at KTOO. I started when I was a teenager, just giving Andy requests when KXL was new. And then eventually I got to be a radio host, and I got to participate in a lot of the events, playing with my high school band. And then I did an NPR digital services training that was hosted here. I just asked Andy if I could come, and he asked Bill and Cheryl. They're like, okay, she can come. And eventually it turned into an internship and then a paid summer gig, and got back to do more stuff with Excellent Radio. So last summer I worked as an arts and culture producer while you were gone, and that was really exciting. But I had applied to be at NPR Music like 3 years ago, and I didn't hear anything back, and I was, like, totally devastated. So I just kind of decided, if I want to do this thing, I'm going to have to commit my life to it, which meant changing my degree from engineering to journalism and just, you know.
Good choice, by the way.
It feels like it now, but it didn't at the time. I felt like I was throwing it all away. I was like, sorry, Mom. I got to do journalism, you know, and then my emphasis was photography because I figured that'd be the hardest thing to pick up on my own. You know, you take classes, you learn it a lot faster. So I'd been working towards NPR Music for a long, long time. And so it was really exciting to get picked.
So for those of us who haven't been to NPR before, can you sort of paint a picture for us? What's it like there? You were sitting right next to Bob Boylan, right?
I was.
Like the guy
the
for
Godfather.
All Songs Considered. Tell us what the scene's like.
Well, it's really shiny and new, and it's the most beautiful, nicest people you've ever met in your life, and everybody's a little bit famous, even if you can't recognize them by their voice. And it was just an incredible place to be, but the pace was really, really fast. I feel like in Alaska, on the West Coast, things just move a little bit slower. And at NPR, we couldn't have been going faster. And in the music department especially, you've got all these competing organizations who want to be the first to break the song or the first to share the song that was broken or the person to have the most exclusive interview. So I was working on All Songs Considered, which is a podcast, and I was helping them build their website and do social media, but I had a hard time just being as fast as I needed to be.
Wow, it sounds like you were redlining the whole time. Do you recommend that for other people?
You know, I think it, yes. I don't think I would have recommended it 2 months ago while I was living it, but I think it makes you a better reporter, a better person. Bob Boylan used to be the director of All Things Considered, so he made sure that I was right about everything. He told me this story about when he handed a script to one of the hosts, and they're like, is this correct? And he's like, well, I think it is. And they're like, you think it is? Like, you want me to go out and tell this story to a billion people and then have me be the one who gets in trouble? So I learned from then on, you know, you have to be very, very careful about your mistakes. Because sometimes when you're in a smaller community, you kind of know everybody and you're allowed to make mistakes. You know, it's going to happen. But at the NPR level, there are no mistakes. They don't occur.
So you were indeed there at the Tiny Desk concert. You have a clip selected for us to listen to. For our listeners that don't know what the Tiny Desk concert is, tell us a little bit about that and then set up this clip for us.
So the Tiny Desk concert started when Stephen Thompson and Bob Boylan, two NPR music hosts, went to South by Southwest in Austin, and they saw Laura Gibson, this really awesome singer-songwriter, perform. And everybody at the bar was just really disrespectful and talked through her entire performance. So Stephen made the joke of inviting her to NPR to play at Bob's desk, and she ended up coming. And so it's a desk that people perform behind. When I was there, the biggest act was like 23 people. It was this marching band called Mukapaza, and it was kind of all these people who'd flunked out a real marching band and had joined in, and they were cheerleaders. So they do all kinds of things. They bring all kinds of artists. T-Pain was the most popular one, I think, and he's like a guy who does auto-tune, and he sang these like hip-hop songs about strippers, but in this really like soulful way, accompanied by acoustic guitar. Yeah. So this clip is from a band called Fox. They're best friends from Wisconsin. And the woman singing just has the most incredible voice.
And you were here for the performance. You were
there. I
was. You were there.
She was so cool. Oh, man. It's weird because you get to see people up close and you can hear their mistakes. And it's just a totally different experience sonically to see them away from their electronic instruments or all the processing they can do vocally to vocals.
Here they are.
Beating a million nightmares, and I chanced to one dream. It was in mint condition in my sleep. And flying one kingfisher, as I was lost, a mind paints a lovely landscape at the cost. Lost actuality, seeing what's real, but dodging the problematic way. Lost actuality, seeing what's real, but dodging the problematic way. I would.
followed you to all you do, and every idea that I created, I would follow.
Well, thank you for that pick. That's Fox. I once heard Bob Boylan say the beauty of the Tiny Desk Concert is that these musicians, and you said this a minute ago, also is that they're put in the situation where they're stripped of all the electronica. It's just this very stripped down, raw concert. And I think you can hear that in that example right there.
Totally. And she always clutches a microphone when she performs. And so she kept reaching down at this microphone that she couldn't touch or else it would have. So she's like, it was kind of like, what do you do with your hand situation? She was just like shaking and terrified and almost cried later in the video, but just out of gratitude.
Beautiful voice. Fox, P-H-O-X.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Fox, and I know you have another clip coming up here in a little while. What are some things that you learned about sort of contemporary music there, and what do you plan to do with that over at KXLL?
Well, I learned a lot about the music business and how music is kind of distributed. There's this whole network of publicists who are just there to kind of make people like my life easier by turning them on to new music and figuring out what their interests are and feeding them really good bands. So I hope that what I learned there I can bring back to KXLL, just ways to find new music. But also one kind of crazy thing I learned at NPR is, like, it's okay to like pop music, which I like never expected. But the people in there, you know, like Ann Power is one of my favorite critics, you know, is way into the Alabama Shakes, but is also into like Kelly Clarkson, and Stephen Thompson loves Beyonce. And there are a lot of discussions about Taylor Swift as an artist and as a songwriter. And I feel like a lot of the stuff we play on KXLL was pop music in the 70s or in the 60s. So it's kind of funny to hear this like melding of this pop music. Because I feel like if KXLL was a station in the 70s, it just wouldn't have worked. Like, you can't have the punk fans and the disco fans listening to the same station. But I feel like over the decades, some of that stuff has lost its stigma, and it is really fun to hear YMCA on the radio, you know, out of nowhere. So that's what I hope to bring back to KXLL, because I feel like a lot of the music, like even Fox, some of the styles that they're taking, and some of their other songs, like, emulate the 1950s doo-wop groups. And so I just feel like we don't have to take ourselves as seriously.
All
as
right.
Tastemakers, I guess. That's what they call Bob and the people in the room, the tastemakers.
No kidding.
You know, they would not call themselves a tastemaker, but really that was their job, was to, like, turn people on to new music. So I hope I can bring new music to Juneau.
And what are some other plans you have for KXLL?
Well, I feel like we're expanding right now. We're trying to get more DJs, branch out our family into the community, try to establish more support for our local musicians and build up our local scene. I feel like especially young people in this community, try and bring more bands here, but also cultivate more bands and be art ambassadors.
Well, Annie, it sounds like a lot of fun. It's been fun catching up with you, too. And you're going to be producing content, working at KXLL. Sounds like a lot of fun.
I can't believe it. Every day it just feels like a dream. It's like, when am I going to wake up and still be an intern?
All right, so you picked one to go out on here. What? Tell us about it.
It's Michael Rault. He's a guitarist and songwriter from Toronto. A lot of his work sounds kind of Beatles-y. He has a lot of those harmonies, but also very rock and roll. And this is one of them from his earlier EP, kind of garage rocky, but very 60s. This is Fall in Love with Every Girl I See.
And remember, pop music is okay, right?
It's okay. Don't tell anybody I said that, Scott.
I won't. See you later, Annie.
Later.
My heart weighs heavy on my mind. The Juno Unitarian Universalist Fellowship invites the community to join service on Sunday, May 24th for Memorial Day, remembering and reflecting on conflict through poetry and song. Service begins at 10 a.m. at the Temple Sukkot Shalom. All are welcome to attend. This message is brought to you by the Juno Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, where love is doctrine and service is prayer.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday afternoon. It's about 22 minutes after the hour. Scott Burton, your host, in for Shona Osterhout today. Joining me in the studio now is Sharon Lowe. She's the grant administrator for the Douglas Community United Methodist Church. Welcome, Sharon.
Hi, how are you?
I am well, and yourself?
Very well.
So you are a very busy person, and it sounds like you're collaboration with the Northern Light United Church. You all are doing a lot of good things. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay. We right now are gearing up for the summer because we are going to be providing free lunches to children at Cedar Park and at Geneva Woods for the summer. We start that the 1st of June, which is the Monday after school gets out, and we will do it 5 days a week until the 14th of August when school starts the following week.
Okay, let's stop there for just a sec, if I may. What let you all know that there was a need for those lunches?
This is a summer program. USDA, it's a national program, has come out with it, and they provide they do reimbursement for it if we provide it to people who are in need of food. We will not turn anybody away if they come, but we will we have to do a head count, and we will be reimbursed by the USDA through the State Department of Education for any meals that we serve to these young children in need.
Probably for your materials and your food, but not your time. That's all donated, right?
Yeah.
And you've also, so that's your summer program, but you've been very busy. It sounds like you're very busy year-round.
We are. We started off, we actually received a grant from the city, from their Health and Social Services block grant, and this is to provide food to various people. We help stock the food pantry at the Douglas Church. They have senior lunches at the senior center at the Douglas Church on Tuesdays and Thursdays that we help finance. We also provide some of the meals at the Glory Hole. But our big push this year was to provide backpack food for the weekend for children who have been identified by their teachers as coming to school on Monday mornings and being hungry when they come to class.
Sure.
And basically what this does is it provides them with two lunches, two breakfasts, and two snacks to eat over the weekend. And
I heard you say that term earlier, Monday morning hungry.
Yes.
Yeah.
That means the kids are not getting food or not getting enough food to eat over the weekend. And that can be a whole variety of reasons. I mean, sometimes a parent has to make a decision between feeding their children and putting a roof over their heads. It can be because parents weren't educated as children themselves on how to provide food for their kids, and they have kids now, and they're kind of foundering out there. You always have some dysfunctional families, but a lot of it is that the kids just aren't being fed.
Okay. So this program at Geneva Woods and Cedar Park begins on June 1st, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and goes through August 14th?
Yes, we'll be doing it at Geneva Woods from noon to 1. Geneva Woods from 11:30 to 1, and Cedar Park from noon to 1. And the kids will show up. We will also have somebody there providing an activity for the kids, so it will supplement some of their reading and math skills during the summer and make sure that they have at least one healthy meal that meets the USDA guidelines for good nutrition.
Okay. Are you in need of any more food or volunteers?
We're always in need of volunteers, and we also have a couple of paid positions. I posted them out there on Craigslist for somebody who will oversee the volunteers and another person who will lead the activities for the kids. But the food service itself, the food preparation, is being done at Northern Lights Church and at the Douglas Church, and then it's being transported to Geneva Woods and to Cedar Park. And the service, the preparation, and the serving of the food is all volunteers. If anybody's interested, they can call either Northern Lights Church or Douglas Community United Methodist Church.
Okay. Sharon Lowe, in speaking about the Summer Food Service Program, among other things. Sharon, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Nope, not at this time. But thank you for having me on. I appreciate the time.
You're welcome, Sharon.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 21st of May, 2015. 1881, on this day, Clara Barton founded the American Red Cross. She was a shy young woman with a stutter. She began teaching 1839, age of 18, overcame her shyness. And early on, Clara Barton said, "I may sometimes be willing to teach for nothing, but if paid at all, I shall never do a man's work for less than a man's pay." Took a job in 1854 at the U.S. Patent Office in Washington, worked hard, and indeed, within a year, was making a salary equal to that of the men in the office. By 1861, war was breaking out, and when the Battle of Bull Run took place, not so far from Washington, a major defeat for the Union, Clara Barton read reports of the battle and realized that the Army had not seriously considered or provided for wounded soldiers, so she began to ride along in ambulances. And afterward, after the war, traveling to Geneva, she learned about the International Red Cross and founded the American Red Cross on this day in 1881. It's the birthday of Alexander Pope, London, 1688, Catholic family, and there was a wave of anti-Catholic sentiment in England at the time, so he was not allowed to attend public school. His aunt taught him to read, a priest taught him Latin and Greek, and he fell in love with the works of Homer when he was only 8. He developed tuberculosis, which affected his bones and stunted his growth. He was a hunchback, about 4'6" tall. Not many of his poems are read today, but he's very often quoted. It was Alexander Pope who said, "To err is human, to forgive divine, and fools rush in where angels fear to tread." Pope said, "A little learning is a dangerous thing. Drink deep or taste not the Pyrian spring." And it was Alexander Pope who said, "Be not the first by whom the new are tried, nor yet the last to lay the old aside." Here's a poem for today by Faith Sheeran entitled "Blessing of the Animals." At my daughter's Catholic school, there is a blessing of the animals at which the children line up with their fat hamsters and gauzy goldfish, their dogs so old they can barely climb the hill. They bring their cats with bald patches and their lizards sleeping in cages under a fake sun. In the line to the priest, there are snakes with white eyes and birds without songs. There are ant farms and worms and rats with long exposed tails. The children wait hours for their animals to be blessed, for the priest's hand to hover over the weight they carry. They bring shoeboxes full of turtles, hairy spiders, frogs with dry skin. I like watching my daughter among the other children, her dog small in her arms, her gaze protective. Children believe in the power of animals tucked into their feathers and shells. They believe in blessings, the sprinkle of holy water, each tiny, unexplained life. A poem by Faith Sheeran, Blessing of the Animals, from Telling the Bees, published by Stephen Austin State University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And by LegalZoom, for over 10 years providing legal solutions for business owners, families, and individuals, including incorporation, LLCs, wills, and living trusts. LegalZoom.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This October, voters will elect assembly and school board members. I'm Mark Wheeler, and I served in the assembly from 2000 to 2005. Holding that office was a life-changing experience. You can do it too. Come to a free workshop on how to run for election on Saturday, June 6th. Register at junolwv.org. Space is limited, so don't wait. There's no better way to give back to our community than serving in public office. Brought to you by CBJ and the League of Women Voters.
It's about 30 minutes until the top of the hour. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, May 21st. Scott Burton, your host, in for Shona Osterhout, and I am here with the one, the only, Nancy DeCherney.
Okay.
For Arts Up.
Here we are.
Thursday edition.
All right.
K2.
So the really big important part of this week is it's your last weekend to see seven homeless mammoths wander New England at Perseverance Theater, and you just gave it a total, like, say it again.
For me, it's up there with, like, the Book of Mormon.
Funny.
I haven't cried that deeply or laughed that hard in a play in a long time.
It is outright prolonged laughter. It is mature audiences only. We should preface it with that. But totally fun and thoughtful and touching.
And it's going to be sunny, and you're going to want to go barbecuing and have fires on the beach.
But if you go for the Sunday when you get out, you 4 and you get out at 6, you still got plenty of time.
And frankly, the sun has just become overwhelming. It's exhausting. We all need to go into a nice dark theater from time to time.
I'm out of outfits.
Right?
How about you?
Me too. Out of I'm recycling these shorts 3 days in a row. I just like my one pair.
All right. So enough about that. It's the weather. Okay, so tomorrow on Friday, you know, everybody's kind of taking a little break. We lived through Jazz and Classics, which was phenomenal.
Right.
And now we're taking a breather before the summer hits. But Friday we have Dan Hobson doing his classical guitar in the Gold Room over the weekend. We have the Seven Homeless Mammoths, so this is your weekend to do that. And there's comedy weekends out at Suite 907, start at 8 o'clock. Up in Haines, of course, it is the Haines Beer Fest this weekend, so it's going to be a beautiful week for that weekend. They're at 8 a.m. Saturday morning. Salmon Creek Trail Fun Run and Walk, which is a benefit for the Juno Family Health and Birth Center. At 8:30, there is the Friends of the Admiralty Wildlife Cruise, but it's sold out. You could always go out there and look hungry. In case somebody doesn't show up, because people, there is a cold going around. And while you're out there, if you don't get to go, from 9 a.m. to 5, it's the Public Garden Day out at the Jensen Olson Arboretum, and I believe they've got some little shrubs and things for sale, and plus it's just beautiful this time of year. So worth going out there. 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., it is the Riverbend Superheroes versus Villains Fun Run. I don't know about that. It is at the Riverbend Covered Courts. The first 75 heroes get a face mask, so head out there for that. Also at 10 a.m. till noon, it is Broken Glass Cleanup at Sandy Beach, put on by the Grateful Dogs of Juno. Most of the dogs would be real happy if you helped them clean up all the little broken glass shards. Also at 10 a.m., starting just a little bit south in the South Channel, it's the Jay Ginter Memorial Day Regatta. Folks will sail down to Taku Harbor overnight and come back. And it's going to be a gorgeous weekend for that. There is a spaghetti dinner fundraiser for Reach at the Moose Lodge from 5 to 7:30 on Saturday. And again, there's Dan Hobson, the Seven Homeless Mammoths, and Community Weekend, or Comedy Weekend. On Sunday morning, there's the ukulele jam at TK McGuire's at 11. At 4 p.m. is your last opportunity to see the mammoths. There, let's see. Great Alaska Bluegrass Band, what are you doing?
That's right. We'll be in Gustavus this weekend, and we will be doing a community jam on Saturday, and then on Sunday we'll be playing for the Preschool and Community Center fundraiser. That show starts at 5:30 at the Salmon River Bridge. We did it last year. Lots of fun. They have this massive jump rope, like used to tie up barges, and they do this community jump rope thing.
Oh, how fun is that?
Oh, it's really fun, not to mention hot dogs and booths and food and bluegrass.
Right.
So.
And it's Memorial Day weekend, so go on over to Gustavus if you didn't get up to Haines. Let's see, Monday is a holiday, of course, and on Tuesday, you can go at 6:30 to the Marie Drake Planetarium. They have a program called Bad Astronomy, What Astronomers View as Bad Astronomy. That starts at 6:30 and goes for about an hour, and then they do the stars, because you can't see them anymore because it's too light out. You need to know where things are. On Wednesday, let's see, we've got a ballroom dance. There are a whole bunch of kids coming from, I believe it's Idaho. The troupe is called Strictly Ballroom Dancers, and they are coming in on a cruise ship. They've been entertaining on the cruise ship, and they want to come here to the Jack and do a demonstration and dance with local dancers. So if you are a ballroom fan, come at 6 o'clock to the Jack, and I think we'll just keep on. They have to get back on their boat at 9 o'clock, but we'll probably just keep on dancing. So
that sounds
fun. Bring your a
unique opportunity.
Yeah, very, very fun. Let's see, and then at 7:30 to 9:30, we have Molly Lewis and Marion Call.
Very exciting.
Geek Girls in Concert at the Goldtown Nickelodeon, so that's going to be great. And that kind of takes us through the week. So it's a good thing the weather's good and you can be outside and doing all these things.
And as usual, you can find details and find the calendar that Nancy speaks of at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council website.
Correct.
And also at the KTOO.org. We're partners in that calendar. So
yes,
very
it's
cool.
Good to have one community calendar. And if you would like to get your stuff on that calendar, send us an email. There's a little form that you fill out and it gets on the calendar and then it gets announced on the radio and on these. It's great.
Absolutely.
So great.
Nancy DeCherney, Executive Director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Anything else?
Nope. Go out and enjoy the fun.
All right.
All right.
I'll see you there at the fun.
Once upon a time, some time ago back on the East Coast, in New York City to be exact, a bunch of artists and painters and sculptors and musicians and poets and writers and actors and dancers and architects all started feeling real superior to their ego counterparts out on the West Coast. So they all got together and decided they would show those snotty surfer upstarts a thing or two about the Big Apple, and they hired themselves a truck. It was a big, spanking new, white, shiny, chrome-plated cab over Peterbilt, with mud flaps, stereo, TV, AM and FM radio, leather seats, and a Naugahyde sleeper. All fresh with new American flag decals and art arc printed on the side of the door with solid 24-karat gold leaf type. And they filled up this truck with the most significant piles and influential heaps of artwork to ever be assembled in modern times and sent it west to chide, cajole, humble, and humiliate the Golden Bear. And this is the true story of that truck. If a truckload of art from New York City came a-rolling down the road, while the driver was singing and sunset was pretty, but the truck turned over and she rolled off the road. Yeah, a truckload of art, it's burning near the highway. Precious optics are scattered all
nobody around.
Comes from Alaska Canopy, now accepting applications for the 2015 summer season. More information at alaskacanopy.com.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon here on a beautiful Thursday afternoon on May 21st. Scott Burton, your host, in for Shona Osterhout. Currently 68 degrees at the Juno Airport, if you can believe it. I've been joined in the studio now by Paul Magid. He is one of the founders of the new Old Time Chautauqua. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. And also one of the co-local organizers that's bringing the new Old Time Chautauqua here to Juno, Natalie Rothaus. Welcome, Natalie.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for coming in out of the sun. What's it like out there?
It's really lovely.
It's really too nice. Something's wrong.
We never take it for granted.
Right. Okay, so Natalie, I want to get to you in just a minute and get lots of details about what's going on. Paul, a few of us know what the new Old Time Chautauqua is, but a lot of us don't.
Mm.
Can you give us some bullet points?
Sure. Okay, so Chautauqua, in general, is sort of an entertainment and education organization. It's been around since 1874. It's part of a movement for self-betterment, and we're part of that movement. We were founded in 1981. And founded by the Flying Karamazov brothers, Ho, of whom I am a part, and Dr. Patch Adams, if you ever heard of him. And we started 34 years ago, and we've been basically giving a month of our lives every year to doing a Chautauqua somewhere in the greater Northwest.
And so it's a bit of a revival, like you said, that started in the late 1800s, right?
Yeah, revival sounds kind of religious. It's more about, PBS and NPR or a TED Talk, that's a Chautauqua. That's where they got it from. The format is a Chautauqua. It's about education and entertainment, basically. And what we kind of added to that mix is our emphasis on community.
And what was it back, you said that you started this one in 84?
81.
81. What was it at that point in your life, at that time, that inspired you to do
well,
this?
We used to do a fair where a lot of us vaudevillians would all get together, and we had so much fun putting a big show together, and you know, with a band and everything, and we just really had a great time. But then it was over in 3 days, and we didn't want it to be over. So, but we wanted to have some sort of frame. If we were going to travel together, obviously we could never afford to pay that many people something, so there had to be some sort of ideal frame that we would be all willing to give up time for. And I went to visit a friend of mine, a guy named Max Gale, who was Woe Jehoiats in the Barney Miller show. And he was, by chance, doing a documentary on the Chautauqua movement. And I read through the paperwork, and I went, my goodness, that's exactly the sort of thing we're kind of doing or want to be doing. And so we basically discussed it with Dr. Patch Adams and the Flying Caramazza family and decided that we'd try to do a Chautauqua. And so we did our first one in 1981. And it just was fantastic. We had such a great time doing shows, but also being involved in the local communities and having these great workshops on, you know, various subjects of both health and science, but we also did, you know, juggling workshops. I mean, it's all sort of the stuff that we're doing now. Of course, we also made a lot of mistakes, like we forgot that you also have to feed people. So we didn't go with a kitchen or anything. Like, here we are on Chautauqua. I'm really hungry.
Typical artist. All right, I want to learn more about that in just a second. Natalie, how did you get involved as a co-local organizer? What appealed to you about the new old-time Chautauqua?
Well, Paul and I have remained friends from when he was here in 92 with the rest of the Chautauquans, and at the time I was with the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. And when Paul was here last year as part of the Arts Council season, and the Flying Caramazza brothers were appearing, we talked with meaning George Reifenstein, who probably a lot of people know, who has remained friends with Paul as well over the years, and we talked about Chautauqua coming back next year, this season. And George and I, our involvement, again, I was with the Arts Council, and George was running the ferries, because thanks to the Alaska Ferry System, they are the Chautauquans are working with them to be able to go to all these different communities around Southeast. So in 1992, they were here for 3 days, and we had a wonderful, wonderful time, and most people involved, myself included, wanted to run away with the circus. Never got to do it. And this time around, I had some time, and George and I have been working with a lot of local groups to make this event happen, which will be from the 2nd to the 4th of July, and we're really lucky that the New Old Time Chautauqua will be here to participate in both the Juno and the Douglas festivities, along with we're going to be doing a benefit show for KTOO, and that will be prior to the fireworks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we're glad to do it, and we thank them. And as Paul was saying, this is all volunteer, and so we are working with a lot of local volunteers. We're working with the city Parks and Recs department, which has just been terrific in helping us out for where these guys will be staying. And we thank the Friends of the Juno Public Library and Juno Public Libraries. They're one of our sponsors. We're going to be doing the Chautauqua Chalk Challenge on the 2nd of July in Douglas, to be followed by a potluck and a music jam in Douglas, so that will kind of kick off some of the Douglas celebrations. They'll be with the Juno Marching Band, the Marching Band, and both be, as I say, in Juno, then walk across the bridge and go over to Douglas, participate in some of the field activities, do a band show at 5 o'clock on the 4th of July, and lots of other stuff in between. We're going to be at the Zach Ridden Youth Center. We're going to be at the Johnson Youth Center. We're going to be at the Pioneer Home. We meaning the New Old Time Chautauqua.
The fun meter is going to be pegged on those couple days, I think.
So, yeah.
And so you usually travel with about 50 Chautauquans, is that right?
55 or 60. This will be about 55 people.
And you cover the Greater Northwest?
The Greater Northwest, which is Alaska, British Columbia, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, and Northern California.
Earlier when you were talking, you said that you added the community aspect to this, and I think that's probably what resonated with Natalie and the rest of us back in 92. Tell us a little bit more about why that's important.
Well, because really, you know, we're all volunteers, and it's the community aspect of it is, in fact, for us, the most important thing. I mean, we're all, a lot of us, professional performers or musicians, and we work commercially all year long, and basically we come in through the backstage door, we do our show, I rarely see the lobby, and I leave. And, you know, there's all these great people out there. And what's really great about Chautauqua is that it's not just us, it's what, I mean, the more a community puts in, the more it gets out of it, right? So we're just like a catalyst. We're like zinc dropped into hydrochloric acid. You know, it's just like, it's up to the community to make the most out of what we bring. And it's up, and what we get out of it too is we get this sort of one-on-one communication with all the people that we're with. So like when we do the potluck, you know, it's great because, you know, people come bring food, we make food, and we actually just talk with everybody. And it's a great way to, like, just get to know a community. And really, you know, that's, you know, human beings are really kind of tribal people, really. You know, we all are. We're all, that's what's in our DNA. And that means actually knowing everybody and talking to people on a, you know, on a actual one-to-one, human-to-human, eye-to-eye basis. And so community is really kind of what it's all about for us. So that's, you know, we're also, you know, trying to involve people and in many different ways to be involved with us. So, like, if you're a musician and you want to be in the band in the show, I mean, we're, you know, here in Juneau, we're connecting up with the Juneau Marching Band. So we're going to make a mega band, and it's going to be super fun. But if the members of that band or anybody else wants to be in our band, like when we're in Centennial Hall, we send you the music in advance, and then we have a couple of rehearsals, and you get to be in the band. Or we're going to have a choir also. We're going to probably do a silly version of Ode to Joy with loads and loads of people. And if people from the community who are singers and want to be in a band, I mean, be in a choir and do a fun version of Ode to Joy, please come. And, you know, there's people that you can talk to, various people who are organizing this, and they will put you in touch with our band director, and they'll send you music, and then we'll have rehearsals. And, you know, but it kind of goes all the way down the lines. You know, we are really happy to be here while, and, you know, we know 4th of July is really amazing and huge here, and it's important to people. And also, it's for me anyway, and I think for a lot of people, it really resonates historically, because a lot of people don't know that, in fact, Chautauqua was here, but long before we were. You know, the first Chautauqua came here in 1918 on September the 5th, and it was here for many years afterwards. And there are great articles in the Alaska Daily Dispatch about, you know, actually there were like 3 weeks of front page articles about the Chautauqua every year, and it was bigger than the 4th of July at that time. It was the biggest event of the year.
And the name Chautauqua, is at a lake in New York?
Yeah, there's a lake in western New York. So in 1874, the first Chautauqua was founded. And it was the idea, well, before that, there were the lyceums, were basically gatherings of people who wanted to continue to learn, right? It's all about learning. And the Chautauqua was basically, instead of being in the town where you would gather, you would go to an idyllic place, like, and spend a week of just, you know, concentrated listening to operas, listening to speakers, learning some sort of thing that, you know, somebody was teaching. And then it morphed into a traveling Chautauqua, because a lot of places couldn't afford to have a facility for a Chautauqua. And the movement was just, like, spreading like wildfire. So then they came up with a brilliant idea. Why don't we bring the facilities to the town, i.e. in a tent? So then the circus Chautauquas began, and there were, you know, 1,000 to 1,500 people in one of these tents, and they would come for a week, and the Chautauqua would come into town, and by 1924, there were 10,000 Chautauqua productions, and over 40 million Americans were in attendance, which is more than half the country. And Teddy Roosevelt called it the most, you know, American thing about America was the Chautauqua. So we're kind of the last traveling Chautauqua left in the country. So it's kind of cool, and if you know, it's you know, it's really an important, I think it's an important thing, and it is something that really affected this country, and, you know, a lot of what we sort of take for granted as far as, you know, how we get our news or how ideas are discussed come out of the Chautauqua movement.
I already know one Junoite that's planning on running away with you, at least one. So.
Well, we're hoping for more. But they'll have to pay their ferry ticket.
And tomorrow, you're going to be having a lunch at 360 downstairs, right?
No. Well, brown bag. It's a brown bag lunch, yeah. And it starts at 12:05, and Paul will be giving a slideshow and a lecture, open to the public, free. I'd like to give a plug, if I may,
please do, Natalie.
For Val Snyder and Brown Boot Costumes, because she is now a certified Chautauquan, and she is one of the many people that are helping us, along with Betsy Sims in Studio A and Jason Ginter, and they're helping us a lot with tech. So if any of you out there do want to volunteer, you're welcome to get a hold of me, Natalie, George Reifenstein, Betsy Sims, Val Snyder. And just let us know what you can do and what you want to do.
You could do it in the old-fashioned way, not even on Facebook or Paul. You just find them here in the community.
Yeah, we kind of gravitate to each other.
Well, I wish we had more time, you too, but that about wraps it up for the day. Thank you so much, Paul Magid, Natalie Rothaus, for coming in today. You can find out more tomorrow downstairs at 360. It's a brown bag lunch at noon. Get ready for the planning of this. Mm-hmm. Get involved, and then it all goes down right around the 4th of July. Thanks so much, you two. Have a great afternoon.
See you on the 4th.
For tuning in to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, May 21st, 2015. Here's the news.